This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
There's a medrash at the opening of the Sedra this week, which we've spoken about on several occasions before, where Omru Yisrael Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Bnei Yisrael said to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ribbono Shel Olam, Lonu Ata Omer Shenoy Lefanecho, do you instruct us to build a menorah and to provide light before you? Atohu Oiroi Shel Olam, you are the light of the world. V'ha'iro Doro Etzlecho, and light and energy lives with you. You are the source of all light. And you tell us that the light must stand by the menorah. Amar lohem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, answers the Ribbono Shel Olam to Bnei Yisrael, Lo shani tzorich lochem. No, don't think that I need your light. I don't need the light. I don't need you. Elo sheta'iru li kederech sheha'arti lochem. But I instruct you to do this so that you can provide light for me in the same way as I provided light for you, not because I need it, but so that you can do for me what I did for you. Why? Lamo? Lalois eschem bifnei ha'umus, so as to elevate you in the eyes of the nations. Sheyihyu oimrim, so that they will say, Ru'u heich Yisrael me'irin, look at the Jewish people, how they provide light for he who gives light to the whole world. What can this be compared to? The pikeach v'sumo, to the case of a blind person and a person who can see, who were walking along the way. Omalui pikeach v'sumo, says the blind person to the, says the one who can see to the blind one, Kishenichnas Latoich Habayis, when they came into the house, Say Vahad Leiklias Haneir Hazeh, Vahayili, light for me this candle, they say to him. Omar Lo Yasumo, says to him the blind man, B'tzevoscho, in goodness I must ask you, Kishehoyisi B'derech, when we were walking along the road, you supported me. I couldn't see where we were walking, and without you, I wouldn't have been able to walk. You supported me as we walked. Ad shenichnasnu l'soich habayis, until we come inside the house, ato hayisu melavo isi, you led me all the way. Ve'achshav ato oimer hadlik li esaner hazeh v'ha'ir li. And now that we're in the house, you tell me to light the, to put on the lights for you? Can't you do that yourself? All this, you've supported us all the way. Without you, we couldn't get anywhere. I was completely helpless without you. Now we come into the house, and you tell me to put on the light? Omalei apikeach, answers the one who can see, the reason I've asked you to put on the light is simply, not because I can't put it on myself, of course I can, but shelei tehe machazik li tzivu, I just don't want you to feel indebted to me. Shayisi melavcho bederech, because I saw you along the road. Therefore I said to you, put on the lights for me, do me a favor, so that you too can experience will not have to experience indebtedness. I'm about to explain. Kach ha-pikeach, zeh ha-kodosh baruch hu. So the pikeach, the wise, the one who can see, that's the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ve-hasumo, elu Yisrael. And the blind one is the Jewish people. All the way in the desert, Hashem led them. Kivan she'omad ha-mishkan, once the Mishkan was established, Kora ha-kodosh baruch hu le-Moshe, Hashem called to Moshe, v'omar lo and said to him, To'iru li, you provide light for me. She'ne'amar b'ha'aloscho es ha-nevus. As it says, when you become elevated through the candles, that's how the Ribbono Shel Olam learns, that's how the Medrash learns the Baha'i Sukho. Bishvil la'alos lochem. The reason you're writing the candles is not because I need them, but the Ha'alotzecho to elevate you, you need the opportunity to respond to me, and this is an opportunity which I'm providing for you. So it is for your elevation that I'm requesting you to light the candle, so that you should not feel that indebtedness to me, in the same way as the story with the blind man and the man who could see, that he should not feel indebted to the blind man should not feel indebted to the one who could see. That's what the Medrash says. And this is the classical Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, which we've spoken about before, who then goes into the understanding of what the expression of HaKoros HaTov does for an individual. That the expression of gratitude, how important it is for the individual who is expressing the gratitude. Normally we think that expressing the gratitude is important for the one who receives it. But the Medrash teaches us that's not so. Baha'alusecho. This will elevate you. The human being becomes ennobled, the human being becomes elevated through the expression of gratitude, not the other way around. He becomes greater through that. And so it's all very well, one can say to somebody else, I don't need any gratitude from you, it's okay, you don't have to say thank you. The reason he's got to say thank you is not because you need the thank you. The reason he's got to say thank you is because that's important for his growth and for his development. And it is important that he says thank you. And he must be trained to say thank you and to express his gratitude and to be makir tov, to do something in return so that there is the removal of the sense of indebtedness. And we've often talked about the importance and centrality of HaKoros HaTov, of an expression of indebtedness in Yiddishkeit, and that really is the basis of the whole of the Torah. As the Chovos HaAvos learns it, that we have to recognize the Ribbono Shel Olam's goodness to us, and being a religious Jew simply means responding and expressing our appreciation, our recognition of that indebtedness in the way we live, in the way we operate. That's all. But there are two difficulties here. The first one is that the moshul is not the same as the nimshal. That the example, the story that the Medrash gives us is not the same as the concept. Because in the story, the blind man turns on the light for the man who can see. But the man who can see really needs the light on. It's true, he could turn it on himself, but he does need the light. Without the light, he wouldn't be able to see. So the blind man is doing a real act of kindness. He's expressing himself, he's doing something which is meaningful. But in the case of the Ribbono Shel Olam, he doesn't need our light. He is the source of light. So he's asking us to turn on the light as a gesture. But it's an empty gesture. It's a gesture which doesn't mean anything. For example, one can want to express to somebody, thinking how you're going to do it, what you're going to do for the person, so you decide you will buy them a gift. So you think and you apply your mind, what could they do with it? I'm able to spend X amount, what could they do with it? What would be good for them? And you watch and you see their home and you think a little bit, eventually you hit on an idea, something that they need. Very nice. Or even if it's not something that they need, but something that they would appreciate, something they would enjoy, something that would enrich their lives in some way or another. That's an expression of HaKoros HaTov. So the person might be a millionaire, it doesn't matter. The person you want to express your indebtedness to might be a millionaire, and you might bring him something very small which he could easily have bought himself. The fact is he never did buy it himself. You can buy him a little tzatzke that makes him happy. Is it that you've relieved the burden from him? No. You're not giving him charity. Is it that you've bought him something that he's unable to buy himself? No. It's just you've expressed your gratitude and given him something which he will find a use for. Something that he will enjoy using, although he could well have bought it himself. But what happens if one thinks, I'm going to express gratitude, what should I do? I've got to give him a gift. So one decides, what kind of a gift are you going to give them? You want to give something that's very nice. And you think and you come to the conclusion you're going to give him a box of chocolates. So you go and you buy a box of kosher Beacon chocolates and then you bring it to him. The only thing is, he happens to be the owner of Beacon chocolates. So that's not a question of that he could buy it himself or he couldn't buy it. That's taking Colas to Newcastle. It's a gesture, but it's a meaningless gesture. It's empty. That, what does he need? It's so meaningless. It's so thoughtless. There's so little point in it. When the blind person turns on the light for the man who can see, it's true that the man who can see can turn on the light himself. Nevertheless, the fact that the blind man turned on the light is a chesed. That helps. But when we make a light for the Ribbono Shel Olam, when we turn on the menorah for the Ribbono Shel Olam, he doesn't need that light at all. He can't make any use of that light at all. What is the purpose? What is the value of that light? We're doing something for the Ribbono Shel Olam which has absolutely no value. It's a meaningless gesture. How can the Medrash make this comparison? How can the Medrash compare these two cases? That's the one difficulty. In other words, for the expression of a feeling of indebtedness and of gratitude, it's true that one doesn't have to repay the indebtedness. That's very often impossible. But there must be a gesture which is meaningful. A meaningless gesture on the surface doesn't appear to be in any way an adequate repayment of gratitude. To do something for somebody that is meaningless, that would not seem to be so. Secondly, the Rashi, when he quotes this Medrash, in a slightly different context, Rashi is talking about why the menorah was constructed in such a way that the lights all beamed inward. Really, the light should have beamed outwards, but all the lights were focused towards the center. Says Rashi, so as to make clear that you must understand that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't need the light. If the purpose of the menorah was to provide light, it would beam outwards. It beams inwards in order that you should appreciate that that's not the intention, that the light is not needed. And the Lashon of Rashi, the words of Rashi uses, is Kadei Shelo Yoimru, so that people will not say La Oiro Hu Tzorich, that he needs it for light. Now in Hebrew we don't have punctuation, so our method of emphasizing words and phrases is by where we position them in a sentence, like any other classical language. And so really Rashi could have said Kadei Shelo Yoimru, so the people will not say Shehu Tzorich La Oiro, that he needs the light. But he doesn't say that. He says Kadei Shelo Yoimru, so the people will not say La oiro hu tzorich, that it's the light that he needs. That not the light that he needs. Implying that there's something else that he does need. But it's true that the Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't need the light, but something else he does need. And that's why he's told him to do it. Which makes good sense, because that would answer our question. That means that some way or other in lighting the menorah, we are doing something for the Ribbono Shel Olam. What it is, we don't yet know. It's not the light. But what is it then? That's the question that we need to deal with this evening. What is it that Bnei Yisrael are told to do for the Ribbono Shel Olam in the lighting of the menorah? What is it that he needs from us? Let's stop there for a moment. We mentioned in the advert that appeared in the newspaper that tonight's shiur, while a unit on its own, is also the third part of the trilogy of the last three shiurim. In the first shiur, we discussed the fact that quantity is not meaningless, and that nor is quantity something that should be separate from quality. On the contrary, quantity is that which is generated by healthy quality. A healthy couple with good midas and good Yerushalayim create healthy children with good midas and with good Yerushalayim. And so it is in every area. If the essence is healthy, if the essence is good and strong and productive and generative, then it will make lots of others like it. And that was the bracha, you remember, that the man gave to the tree that had everything. The bracha is that you should make many more trees just like you. Quantity is not what's important, it's the quality that counts. It's terrible how we get affected by these cliches. We start believing them, we start accepting them, although they have no source. It's not the quantity that counts, it's the quality. Not true. If the quantity isn't there, it's a simon that the quality is not productive. It's a simon that the quality is sterile. It might be quality, but it's sterile quality. And that's not good enough. So the quantity does count. We need quantity as well. We need growth. We need multiplication as well. That was the first shiur. The second shiur, we discussed the condition for the development of that quantity. But it's not good enough having a healthy essence. A healthy essence alone does not produce quantity. You can take a very healthy man, he can't make children. You can take a very healthy woman, she can't make children. There needs to be a certain relationship for multiplication to take place. for bracha to occur, there needs to be an essence and a container. There needs to be an essence and there needs to be a kli. But more than that, we learned also there has to be a dynamic interrelationship between the essence and the kli. Loi motzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu kli matzik bracha elo hasholim. But the Ribbono Shel Olam found the only utensil able to contain bracha, to contain this quality developing into quantity, was shalom. Shalom means a fulfilled and complete interrelationship, where the one complements the other, where the essence and the kli, where the essence and the utensil are complementing one another and are interrelating with one another. And we in fact discussed that just as in Torah, the deeds are the kli, deeds are actions, they're external, and the essence is the chokhmah, the wisdom that stands behind those deeds. Yet in Pirkei Avos, Chazal compare the deeds to the roots and the chokhmah to the branches, implying that not only does the kli draw from the essence, but the essence also draws from the kli. The kli, the utensil, is active in the relationship. It's not passive in the relationship. And that's something very unique about the spiritual relationship between the content and the container. In the physical world, the container is completely dormant, it's completely passive. In the spiritual world, not so. The container is also active. Even in the spiritual world, even in the physical world, we have such a concept. The Gemara says that certain kinds of kelim are good for wine. Earthenware utensils and so on. There are certain utensils that improve the wine, and other utensils that don't do the wine any good. So we see a container can affect the essence. Put the thing into the wrong container, it can deteriorate. If you put it into the right container, it can improve. That's an example in the physical world too, but in the spiritual world, it's always like that. That the container affects the content, and the content affects the container. The two interrelate dynamically. That was the second shift. Now let us propose something a little way out, that we'll then analyze to see whether there's any strength in it. What we're going to propose is the following. That when Hashem created us in His image, what Hashem was creating was the kli for Himself, was the utensil for Himself. Hashem is the essence of all essences. And the title of the shiur this evening was, does Hashem need a kli too? Does He also need a utensil? Does He also need a container? And we have certain indications that He does. The whole world is full of Hashem's honor. That doesn't mean that Hashem's honor is contained only in the world. Chas v'sholem. Hashem's honor is infinite. There's no end to Hashem's honor. It cannot be contained in the world. Yet we say, the world contains His honor. So we're seeing the world in a relationship of kli, of container, to the kovod Hashem, to the honor of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now, in this whole discussion, what I've got to do is introduce you to a difficult Kabbalistic concept. I see that Kabbalism is in the vogue at the moment, and that Kabbalists draw large crowds of people and large amounts of money, and therefore I think it's I better just bring in a bit of Kabbalism into the shiur as well. And that is, there's a big difference between talking about the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam and what in Kabbalah we mean when we talk about the concept of the Shem Havayah, the name of the Ribbono Shel Olam, Yudkei Vovkei. The essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam is something we don't talk about. We don't understand it. It's beyond us. It's impossible to grasp in any way whatever. And there's no point in trying to analyze it or understand it in any way whatever. It's totally beyond us. It's bigger than anything has ever been and anything will be. It's in every way beyond the greatest human being that ever lived. We can't even talk that. We don't have a name for it, for the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The moment we give the Ribbono Shel Olam a name, we are already talking about a defined aspect of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And each name of the Ribbono Shel Olam refers to a different defined aspect of the Ribbono Shel Olam. When we talk about Elohim, that's one defined aspect. When we talk about Yudkei Vovkei, the Shem Havayah, then we're talking about another aspect. Yudkei Vovkei means He who initiates all life. He who makes existence. He who is existence. The creator and motivator and sustainer of existence. That's what we mean when we say Yudkei Vovkei. The Ribbono Shel Olam who's constantly inputting into the Bria, constantly feeding us in, as it said, you know, the Reish Chochma says, for example, that just as the Neshomo sustains the guf, just as the soul sustains the body. If we didn't have a soul, we're dead. Still got a body, doesn't help. It is the soul that keeps the body alive. It's the soul that enables us to think. It's the soul that enables us to operate. It's the soul that enables us to speak and to communicate. Our life force comes from the soul, not from the body. So the life force of the entire Bria in the time is feeding us. It's like a massive generator which is plugged in to an electrical appliance. It's not just that you have to plug it in once and then you can withdraw. All the time it's plugged in, the appliance can work. The moment the plug is removed, the appliance cannot work anymore. That aspect, that energizing, that giving us of the power to exist in the whole world, the power to exist, that's what we mean when we talk of God. Shem Havayah, creator of the world, maintainer of the world, feeder to the world, energizer to the world, he who gives and keeps life going. That's when we talk about Yud-Kei, Vov-Kei, the Ribbono Shel Olam, that's what we mean. When we talk about Elohim, we mean the judge, he who sets limitations, he who sets standards, he who sets barriers, definitions to the world. It's another aspect of the Ribbono Shel Olam which we're not going to be dealing with this evening. And there's no question that we are unable in any way to affect the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's out of the question. And so there should be no misunderstanding in anything that I'm saying this evening of any such suggestion, chas v'sholem, that we can affect the Ribbono Shel Olam. In his essence, that's not possible. Not only can't we affect the Ribbono Shel Olam in his essence, but we can't really even affect the Ribbono Shel Olam's name, the Havayo, except in one particular way. There's a piece of Zohar that is important on this aspect in Pinchas Daf Resh Kaf Hey on the Dalas that says the following: Ihu Sholit Al Kola, the Ribbono Shel Olam rules over everything. The less man the Sholit Bay, and there's nobody who can rule over him. Ihu Tofis Bekalo, he holds everything in his grasp. The less man the Tofis Bay, and nobody can grasp him. He cannot be grasped. The ihu loy iskri yudke vovke uvechol shema, and he is only termed God yudke vovke, any or any of his other names. Elo be ispashtus nohoire alayhu, only when his light, when his energy, is radiated towards us. Very important. So we see here the concept that yudke vovke, the name of Hashem, does not connotate Hashem's essence. It only refers to Hashem's relationship to us when He radiates energy towards us. Then we see that energy, and we term that energy, that godly energy coming from the Ribbono Shel Olam, which is our only vision of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's all we can grasp of Him. That's all we can see. That source of energy, that source of light, that source of creation, we term that Yud-Kei Vov-Kei. B'chad istalik minayu, and when He withdraws from us, because of our avers, because of our misdeeds, the Ribbono Shel Olam withdraws. Les le migrome shem klal minhoyim. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't have any names at all. So it's not that we can detract from God's name or damage God's name. We can't. The Ribbono Shel Olam's essence we can't touch. And His name is only there when He's radiating to us. When He stops radiating to us, His name doesn't exist. So on the one hand we see that we can't touch the Ribbono Shel Olam, we can in no way affect Him. On the other hand we see that that when we're talking about His name, about Havayo, that which we call God, that's only in His relationship to us. Now that little introduction is important to understand what follows. So back to the principle, we can't affect the Ribbono Shel Olam at all. But let us assume, for whatever reason, that the Ribbono Shel Olam created this world as a kli, as a container for His own essence. The whole world contains His honor. His honor refers to His radiance. His honor refers to Shem Havayah. He doesn't need a container for His essence. No container can contain His essence. He is the container of all. What do we call the Ribbono Shel Olam? Mokum, a place. Mokum is a container. A place contains something. That's why it's a place. And we call the Ribbono Shel Olam is the place Himself. So He can't be contained. That can't be. That His covered can be contained, maybe. And maybe His covered, in fact, needs a container. And the world that He created is the container, is the kli of that covered, of that glory and that honor of the Ribbono Shel Olam. No container, no profit. As I said, that's a bit of a way out suggestion, because it tends to suggest that the Ribbono Shel Olam has made his kavod dependent on us. Not his essence is independent and beyond us. But his kavod might be dependent on us, which, if it is so, places an enormous responsibility on us. It puts us in a position of frightening, awesome responsibility. Now I'm going to learn another short piece of Zohar with you. I said Kabbalism is in the vogue, so we've got to keep up with the fashion. This piece of Zohar in Vayikra, in Batei Amud Aleph, is based on a pasuk, Gadol Hashem u'mehulol mo'id. Hashem is great and very much praised. Be'ir Elokeinu har kodesho, in the city of Hashem, his holy mountain. Says the Zohar that the Zohu b'nei Korach, this is from a mizmor of b'nei Korach, l'shabcho lo l'knesses Yisroel. That phrase is not a phrase in praise of God. That posuk, Godel Hashem u'mehulol mo'id, that Hashem is great and exceedingly praised, be'ir Elokeinu har kodesho, in the city of God at his holy mountain, that posuk, says the Zohar, is praise of Knesset Yisrael, of the Jewish people, not praise of Hashem. Emosoi ikri kuchibrichu godo. Do you know what this posuk is saying, says the Zohar? When may Hashem be termed great, godo? Bizmano de Knesset Yisrael ishtarkosime. Only when the Bnei Yisrael are with Hashem. Then he's godo. Hadohu dichtiv, that's what it means. Be'ir Elokeinu, hu godol be'ir Elokeinu, imer'ir Elokeinu. When he is with the city of our God, when he is with the society of Am Yisrael, then he's God. And if not, chas v'sholem, it would appear from this, that there is a pegimo in his godless. He becomes less of a godol, less great. Again, we're not talking about Hashem's essence, we're talking about his kovod. My mashma, what does this imply? Ishtamo, it implies the malko beloi matruniso, lav hu malko. A king who has no queen is no king. That's what it implies. The lav hu godo, and he cannot be considered great. A king has no kingdom. He has no palace. He has no queen. Can't call him a great king. No matter how great in essence he is, if he doesn't have a kingdom, he's not great. You can't call him praised. Who's praising him? We'll begin, we're going to come back to that. I want to finish this little paragraph, because this little paragraph is a beautiful expression of last week's shiur and the week before. We'll begin, and because of that principle, kol man deloyishtakach dokor v'nukvo, any person who isn't found in a situation of male and female interrelating, and remember last week's shiur, that does not necessarily mean man and woman, that means dochor unukvo, male and female interrelationship, essence and kli, giving, receiving, essence, containing. Anybody who does not find himself in a relationship of male-female, kol shvocho iad vimine, all praise is lacking from him. V'lavu bichlolo d'odom, and he's not really considered an odom, he's not really considered a human being. We'll analyze that later on in the shiur. The loy oida, not only that, elo de lav ihu kedai li isbarcho, he is not worthy of broche. Here we have in the Zohar the very words on which the last two shiurim are based. That if there isn't the male-female interrelationship, there cannot be broche. Broche is multiplication, and multiplication requires male-female relationship, dachru mitzvah relationship. If that doesn't exist, there cannot be productivity. A male-female relationship, not meaning necessarily only man and woman, but the relation, the male-female relationship in the concept of male and female. Let's go back to the earlier part where he says that a king without a queen, lavu malko. And what's he referring to? What's the image? That Hashem Yisrael is not a king. It's an amazing statement to make. It's the kind of statement one couldn't make if one didn't have a source for it. A king without a queen, God without Klal Yisrael, is not a king. And what is Klal Yisrael referred to? Let's stop there for a moment. Good, so we understand. King without a kingdom is no king. We need a kingdom. So Hashem created us because He needed, not that He needs a kingdom, but because in His wisdom He wanted there to be a kingdom. Not only the essence of goodness, but He wanted the expression of goodness. So He created kelim, utensils, that which is able to receive His goodness, that which is able to receive His creativity, that which is able to receive His life force. He created a bria. He created the universe, the world with everything inside it, so that He could feed into it and give it goodness. The world then is His kli. Fine, good. So we see there's our outrageous postulation. We see a basis for it. But what kind of a kli is it, says the Zohar? It's a male-female kli. It's not just a passive kli. It's not just an inanimate kli. This is a male-female relationship. A melech and a matruniso, a king and a queen. Is the role of the queen just to be passively present to receive the goodness of the king? No. The role of the queen is to be active in extracting the goodness from the king. Different role altogether. And so we see that the Bnei Yisrael have a role, an active role, not just a passive role, in extracting the goodness from the Ribbono Shel Olam, in extracting the malchus from the Ribbono Shel Olam, the kingship, in extracting the kovod, the glory from the Ribbono Shel Olam. We are responsible for that. And without that, and not just by merely existing, Knesset Yisrael has to be ishtakhis imei. We've got to be with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We've got to be serving Him, working with Him closely for that to exist. And if that doesn't exist, then the principle of Godol Hashem u'Mehul Moed doesn't apply. Then Hashem's name is no longer great, and He is not praised, not because there's anything wrong with His essence, chas v'sholem, but it's because it's not coming to expression. We are responsible for the expression of Hashem's goodness in the world. Unbelievable concept. We discussed last week the role of a kli. The role of the female element of this relationship. And it's the example that I've given several times in the last few weeks. Various examples. Whether it's the teacher-student example. My brother tells me that the siyata dishmaya that he has when he gives a shiur, the heavenly guidance that he has, there's no question, he says, which is clear from anybody who's taught Torah, that it depends that one has siyata dishmaya because of the people who are listening, not just because of the one who's giving. But he says much further than that. He says it depends also on the people who are present in the shir. He says, so there are certain young men I know, if they're not in the shir, I won't have the same siyata dishmaya, if they're not present. The siyata dishmaya varies depending on who's present. And he's watched it, he's scientifically recorded it, and noted it over the years, and seen how this affects him. But it's not just a question of siyata dishmaya, it's not just a question of godly intervention. It's much more than that too. It's a question of drawing out. The production of a shiur is not something which is merely created in the mind of the teacher, and he comes and it's all prepared and that's it. The production of the shiur is drawn out from him by the people who are present. And even those of my Didei Shiur who actually prepare every word of their Shiur and they deliver their Shiur word for word according to the way they prepared it, even they, the mannerism in which they give it, the atmosphere with which they give it, the conviction with which they give it, the tone of voice in which they give it, all that is extracted from them by the people who are present. It's for that reason that you remember that I've mentioned, for that reason among others, that what a chutzpah it is to send a tape recorder to a shiur in place of oneself. The tape recorder can hear the shiur fine. It hears the shiur better than any Talmud. It hears accurately, and it doesn't misquote, and it doesn't misunderstand. So from that point of view, a tape recorder is a teacher's dream. It can give back exactly what you told it, and there's no difficulty, there's no problem. It doesn't doze off in the middle of the shiur either. It doesn't ask questions that you can't answer. It's a perfect student. But it doesn't demand anything of you. That means you are benefiting from a shiur. The owner of the tape recorder is benefiting from a shiur in which he invested nothing. That's taking without giving. Sure, there are times when that's true. There's a situation where one can't make a shiur, so rather have a tape recorder but not be there altogether and catch up so that you can continue investing in the shiur at a later stage. But that's part of the rudeness of sending a tape recorder along instead of an individual. If you're there, you're a contributor. The way you sit, the expression, the fact that you're there, all that has. When an audience sits and listens to a violinist playing, the quality and caliber of the audience and their responsiveness will affect the quality of the playing of the violinist. There's no question about that. I think we've lost a lot in these artificial recordings that they do nowadays, where the artists record in studios. There's a different atmosphere to a live recording. It's not as perfect, and you hear coughing in the background, and the sound isn't as balanced, and the acoustics aren't as outstanding, but there's a touch of aliveness which no studio recording can simulate. It's not possible, because the studio recording is not the creation of artist and audience together. It's the creation only of the artist. The role of the receptacle is not merely to receive. The role of the receptacle is to be active. And we discussed last week also, one of the areas of a kli, a container, is the environment in which one operates, the community to which one belongs, the society in which one lives. And one wants kelim which make demands on one. One doesn't want a kli which is passive. One wants a kli which is going to extract from one the very best that one can give. One wants to go to a university that is going to demand the highest standards of one. One wants to work for an employer who's going to demand the highest standards of one. One wants to learn in a shiur where the Rebbe is going to demand the highest standards of one. That's where one flourishes best, not in a place where one is permitted to be passive, where you can come into the shiur, sit down, walk out, and it makes no difference what standard you're attaining. That's not the kind of shiur one should choose for oneself. That's a shiur in which nothing is demanded of you, and you're demanding nothing of the shiur, and it's a totally sterile relationship. That's not Torah. In Torah, there has to be a relationship of demand. There has to be a relationship of essence and utensil, each one affecting the other. There has to be dynamics. And if the utensil that one has chosen for oneself is not sufficiently demanding, then the inside eventually becomes sterile and deteriorates. And vice versa, a teacher wants to choose for himself students who are going to demand. He doesn't just need a passive audience. He needs students who are going to demand certain standards. Gave a lecture in another town the other evening on marriage, and I asked them what they thought was the essence of marriage, and I discussed it and so on. One fellow had a criticism at the end of the shiur, put up his hand, and he said, "You haven't spoken about acceptance." In his opinion, the most important thing in marriage is acceptance. I said, "What do you mean by acceptance? Is that the other party must accept one as one is? It's got to be acceptance. You've got to don't expect things from one that one can't give." And I tore into him, and he appreciated it greatly afterwards. What kind of a marriage is that, where nothing is expected of you, where you're not demanded to change? What do you need to get married for that? You want a marriage which is going to demand. You want a marriage where there is total non-acceptance of what you are. Only acceptance of what you could be. We shouldn't accept that in our spouses, we shouldn't accept that in our teachers, and we shouldn't accept that in our students. Not interested in what you are. Unacceptable. What's important is what you could be. That's the only thing I'm prepared to accept. And when there's that kind of relationship between nukva and dukhra, between female and male, between teacher and student, between employer and employee, then there's a different concept altogether. Then you've got the achievement of excellence. Then you've got growth. Then you've got development. And so the Zohar tells us that our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam is not merely a non-dynamic essence and container. The relationship is male-female, king-queen. And after all, isn't that the theme of Shir HaShirim? The relationship by king-queen. At Har Sinai, we're told that the Ribbono Shel Olam married Klal Yisrael. Kiddushin, we became married to the Ribbono. What does it mean, became married? That we just become dormant utensils, there to receive Hashem's goodness? Know that we become active utensils there to extract Hashem's glory and to magnify it in the world. That's our role. To build the Ribbono Shel Olam's esteem. Not his self-esteem, chas v'sholem, but to build his esteem in the eyes of the world. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam needs from us. And so he needs our feedback. It's not good enough that we're there passively accepting his goodness. It's true, he needs us to do good to us. That's what he created us for. Not that he needs us, he wants us to do good to us. That's the ultimate of good, is doing good. Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to radiate, so he created utensils capable of receiving that radiation. He created a universe, a world, plants, animals, people, Yidden, gave them a Torah, so that he could give of his goodness to the world. But that's not where it stops, that's where it starts. What the Ribbono Shel Olam needs from us furthermore is a response. A violinist. Imagine that he never had an opportunity to perform. What kind of a violinist would he be? Limited. So he needs an audience. He gets an audience. And the audience sits there absolutely stum. No response, no action. He looks at their faces blank from the beginning of the to the end. He comes to exciting parts of his performance and they sit there blank. And he comes to a delicate part of his performance that requires the utmost skill, that very seldom is he able to perform perfectly. And the sweat's pouring down his face and he gets through it and it's perfect. And he looks at them blank, dull faces. They haven't noticed a thing. What does he feel like? Does that extract beautiful playing from him? Does that make him a greater violinist? Of course it doesn't. He needs an audience, but he needs an active audience. He needs an audience that gasps when he comes to those passages. He needs an audience that are sitting on the edges of their seat as he comes to the parts that are difficult to play, waiting to see if he's going to get through it or he's going to make a mistake. And he needs an audience to break into a smile of relief when he finally gets through it. That makes a great violinist. That makes a great artist. That's what he needs from the audience. He needs their feedback. He needs their responses. That's what does it. And if he hasn't got that, does that mean that he's not a great violinist? It doesn't detract from the essential ability and quality that he has. That he's got, you can't call him great because he doesn't have a chance to express it. So what we're dealing with is the difference between a violinist who might be perfect in his ability to play, absolutely perfect, tops the best in the world, but nobody's ever heard him. Nobody's ever seen him. Nobody's been able to applaud him. Says the Tzar, you can't call that great and praised. He's sent, the essence is expressed when there has been an opportunity to express itself. That's what the Ribbono Shel Olam needs from us. He needs our responsiveness. And so if we go back now to the initial Medrash, we can understand it with a lot more clarity. Amru Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, said the Yisrael before the Ribbono Shel Olam. Ribbono Shel Olam, Lonu Atah Omer Shemei Lefanecha, you tell us to provide light for you. Atah Oir Shel Olam, you are the light of the world. V'ha'ir Ador Etzmecho, and with you does the light dwell. And you tell us to light the candles of the menorah. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Ribbono Shel Olam, Lo Yishani Tzorich Lachem. No, I don't need the light that you can provide. It's true, I'm the source of light. Elo Shetoiru Li Kederech Sheherati Lachem. I need you to respond to me. When I give you light, I need to see your faces light up. I need to see that light doing something. I need to see you respond. You're live people, not dead people. And a live person wants to express himself, just as I, the Ribbono Shel Olam, want to express myself. That's why I created you, so that I could express my essence, that I could radiate outwards. Radiate it outwards, so you too should want to express yourself, because I've created you in my image. And I want to see that expression. And so I do need you. I don't need the light, but I need your expression. I need that. So when Rashi says, Kadesh Shelo Yoimru Lohiro Hutzorich, when it says that the people should not say that Hashem needs the light, that's exactly right. He doesn't need the light. But it doesn't mean that he doesn't need us. Kadesh Shelo Yoimru Lohiro Hutzorich, so the people shouldn't say that he doesn't need the light, that he needs the act of lighting, that he does need. That expression, that need to express, the doing something, that he needs from us. And so while the moshel is still not perfectly the same as the nimshel, it's a lot closer. It's true that the man who can see uses the light, and he can turn the light on himself. But the joy he gets from that light is not just the fact that there's light. The joy he gets from that light is that that light is a product of a person wanting to respond to him in some way. And there's no way we can respond to the Ribbono Shel Olam meaningfully in a way that we're really going to make a difference to him. because he's everything. There's no way that we can make a difference to the Rebbeinu Shlom as we learn. Nevertheless, he needs responsiveness. He needs an expression from us. He needs response. He needs to see us alive. He needs to see us wanting to do something. He needs to see us mirroring himself. As he gives us light, he needs to see us wanting to provide him with light in return. And light is energy. Light is Torah. Light is spirituality. Light is the most spiritual thing in the physical world. And on the Friday morning Lady Shiur, we learned a piece of Derech Hashem, and I'm just going to read a line or two to you, which describes this relationship further. And here the Derech Hashem is speaking about the relationship between the neshama and the guf, between the body and the soul. Again, a relationship of essence and container, kli. The neshama, our soul, that's our essence. Our body, that's a kli. And we think normally that it is our neshama which keeps on giving to the kli. The kli is merely a container. But on the basis of our principles that we've developed last week and this week, we see that that's not sufficient. If it's a real container, then our bodies should be contributing to our souls as well. There has to be a two-way relationship. And the Derech Hashem explains that the neshama is mispa eles mimasei haguf. This is in the beginning of the third chelek, that the neshama is affected by the deeds of the body. Lihiskasher al yodom ba'ir habir. For it is through the deeds of the body that the Ribbono Shel, that the neshama, that the soul, establishes a connectedness with the Ribbono Shel. Or through the deeds of the body, we can remove the soul from its connectedness with Hashem. Belidobek bekeiches hatumo, and we can reattach our soul to negative sources of input. So imagine two massive sources of energy input: the Ribbono Shel and the keiches hatumo, the negative sources of input. I don't think it's the same in physics as positive and negative in the electrical circuit, but you can imagine such a concept, positive force and a negative force. And the actions of the body determine to which source the soul is going to be connected, to positive or to negative. But that's not the end of it. One that is the soul afterwards that acts back onto the human being. And it leads the life force. Umadrichoso, and it directs it, v'chokekes bot siyurei ha'askola lefi achanoso, and it engraves in its intellectual concepts, umoyledes bo ha'machashovis v'harotzen, and the soul conceives in the human being thoughts and desires. So where do our thoughts come from? Our souls. Where do our desires come from? Our souls. But it's done according to the side to which our souls are connected. So our souls are merely conductors. If we connect our conductor up to the Ribbono Shel Olam, then the Ribbono Shel Olam energizes us, and we have thoughts of holiness and sanctity, and we have desires of holiness and sanctity, and ambitions of holiness and sanctity. If we disconnect our soul from the Ribbono Shel Olam and we connect it to the negative forces, to the Keches Hatumo, then we have thoughts of negativity and negative desires and negative ambitions and destructive feelings. That's where they come from. So we see the two-way relationship. It is our body which determines where the soul is connected. The body is the kli, that's all. It's only the container. But a container in spirituality is active. A container in spirituality is not passive. And it is our body through our physical deeds, plain, basic physical deeds, that determine to what we're going to attach our neshama. And once the neshama is attached, the source to which it is attached will in turn affect our minds and our motivations and our ideas. All other philosophies of motivation and most other religions base themselves on the fact that the mind motivates the deeds. And depending on what you're thinking, that will determine what you do. That's true. But what you think depends on what you do too. It works both ways. And so while it's true that your mind determines your action in turn determines your mind as well. And since it's easier to control your deeds than it is to control your mind, that's where it all starts from. And so what do we begin with? What does the Torah deal with? Deeds. As we said last week, Not the ahavta l'recha kamecha, not love your neighbor as yourself. That's a feeling. But where does that feeling come from? It comes from a holy soul, from a soul that is connected to Hashem. And how does a soul get connected to Hashem? With deeds, with action. Don't do unto others what you don't want done to yourself. Dry formula and instruction, deeds, action. That kind of action results in your feeling of love to your friend. Because that will be fed from the source of Kedusha, from the source of holiness, and not from the source of Tumah. And that's why the whole Torah is filled not with what thou shalt feel, and what thou shalt think, and what thou shalt conceive of. The whole Torah is filled with what thou shalt do. Because that's where it all starts. The kli, the utensil, is the origin of everything. That determines the quality of the essence. You can have the most wonderful essence, but if the environment isn't there to extract holiness from that essence, then that essence is going to be impotent. Nothing is going to come from it. No force, no energy is going to be felt as a result of it. You have to create the environment in which it operates. And the environment in which it operates is deeds. And so it is in all areas of our lives, that we have to live with that kind of relationship. And we have to know that in order to extract the feelings of Kedusha, the feelings of sanctity, we have to create Kelim. That in order to extract from ourselves the essence of what we are, if we want to create, if we want to give, we have to construct Kelim. And just as the violinist has to have his concerts, and he has to go on the circuit, and he has to appear, not for his honor and his glory, or perhaps yes, for his honor and his glory, because we've now defined honor and glory in a very positive sense. Of course it can be negatively used. Of course it can destroy the refinement of a human being. Of course it can lead to arrogance. But there is a very positive side of kovod, of mehulol. Godel Hashem u'mehulol me'oid. Those are phrases we use with regard to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The kovod is the bringing out of the potential into the actual. And if our violinist friend doesn't do the circuit and go to the concerts, and the more kovod there is, the better it is for him to extract from him the finest playing he can give. So we need to know it's not good enough to have it within ourselves. We need to get it out. We need to radiate. We need to affect the world around us. How's that going to be done? There needs to be a key. There needs to be a utensil. The Medrash in Bereishis says so beautifully, after man is created, and one part of his brocha is, Uradu bidgas hayam, and rule over the fish of the sea and the animals of the field, the whole world, rule over them. Rabbi Yaakov min Kfar Hanan amar, Rabbi Yaakov from Kfar Hanan said, Omer Rabbi Yaakov to Kfar Hanan, Eshehu betzalmeinu kidmuseinu uradu. Those people who are in our form and our image, those people who contain the essence of godliness, uradu, they will rule. They will affect their environment. They will be potent. Esheinu betzalmeinu kidmuseinu. Those who are not created in God's image, who do not contain that image, yerdu, they will go down. Radu means two different things. Radu means rule, subjugate, and radu means deteriorate. And the Medrash learns that God is saying both. Not everybody is created in the image of God. Perhaps that would be unfair. Everybody is created in the image of God, but not everybody retains the image of God. One can lose it. That we see there. Those who are in the image of God, uradu, they will rule. Why? What is the Ribbono Shel Olam? He rules. He gives forth of his essence. Those who are not, riyadu, they will go down. There, the do means deteriorate, and they will deteriorate. That means Hashem expects us to relate to the world as He relates to us. Just as He has an essence that He isn't satisfied with that essence, He wants a world that extracts goodness out of Him. So we too have our essences, we have our intelligence, and we have our talents, and we have our personalities and our souls. That's not good enough. We need an environment in which to operate. We need to express that. We need to radiate that. We need to affect the world in which we live. And how do you affect the world in which you live? If all that goodness is coming out, and how does it come out? You need a female. There needs to be a nukva. In the literal sense, there needs to be marriage. But further than that, there needs to be creative kelim, utensils, which are not passive but which are active. Utensils which extract from the human being the best of what he has to offer. And we have different ways of doing that. The one way we have of doing that is a seder. A seder is a routine. What is a routine? It's form. It's formality. A routine. This is what I do. Every morning at 5:45, I get up. And what it makes no difference. That's my routine. Every morning at 6:50, I learn Chumash and Rashi. Every morning at 7:30, I learn Mishnah. Every morning at 8:00, I have breakfast. At 8:30, I go to work. Whatever the routine is, I'm learning. At 5:30, I daven Mincha. I have another shiur. 7:00, I daven Maariv. I go home. That's my routine. Just a formality. That's all it is. But a formality is a kli. And a kli extracts out of one something. It makes one operate in a completely different way. A kli is a home. A home environment is also a kli. It's also a utensil, a container. And we want to be able to put into our home. But in order to put into the home, the home needs to extract that from us. The home needs to be demanded. And so wife needs to demand from husband, husband needs to demand from wife, children need to demand from parents, not in the physical world, not in the physical way as our children are used to demanding, but in the spiritual way, children need to demand from parents. Father comes home from work, he's tired, and he's got so much to do still, he's got his own learning to do, and after his own learning, he's still got work that he's brought home from his office, and all sorts of things that he has to do, and he's got a social life to live. The last thing he wants to do is to still have to spend time teaching his children. And if his children don't demand it, then what will happen? He won't do it. That's not a home environment. A home environment is where children demand it. If that's what I want from you, you jolly well sit down and you learn with me. That's it. And that nothing gives a father more nachas than have that demanded from him rather than a new bicycle or a new motor car or whatever else it is the children nowadays demand. Spend time with me. Learn my Chumash Rashi with me. Prepare my classes with me for tomorrow. But if it isn't demanded, it doesn't happen. And the wife needs to demand from the husband from the wife, and the parents need to demand from the children in the same way. The home has to be an environment in which demands are placed. That, an environment in which achievements are recognized. There also has to be an audience. There also has to be somebody who says, fantastic, that was good. A parent has to say that to a child. A child has to say it to a parent. A husband to a wife, and a wife to a husband. Just as there's a melech below matronisa, there's no king without a queen, and the queen's role is to applaud as well. The queen's role is to be mahalil, to be meshabeach, to exalt the Ribbono Shel Olam, not just to sit there passively. So in all that we do too, we need to provide for ourselves environments that encourage us, not only demand from us, but demand on the one hand and applaud on the other hand. It's no good for a human being to say, I don't need applause, I don't need the honor, I don't need the gratitude, it's all okay. That's a lie. We do need the honor and we can face up to it and there's nothing embarrassing about it altogether. Person goes, I don't need any thank yous, it's okay, I just do it for the love of it. No such thing, you do need the thank yous because without the thank yous you stop growing. You do need the thank yous, you do need the expressions of gratitude. One invests the chesed into an environment that demands chesed and one grows out of that. In an environment that responds to it and that appreciates it. Every Shabbos morning, Stanley announces who provided the Kiddush and who provided the Shalashudas. That's not just that we should know it as a matter of information. And that's not just because Stanley is being motzi us all in our obligation to be Makir Tov. That's so that each one of us should know who to go up to after the Kiddush and say, thank you very much, that was really good. That's why he told us, but we don't do it. And very difficult to be constantly feeding in chesed where there's no feedback. It's all very well to be in an environment that demands chesed, as I've spoken several times today already, and an environment must demand chesed, but an environment also needs to applaud chesed. And it's no good fooling ourselves into the belief that we don't need the recognition. Everybody needs recognition. It's terribly important. Terribly important indeed. After last night's Motzei Shabbos here, one lady phoned me up and left a message on my answer phone. What she thought of the shiur. Very important to me. It helped me prepare this week's shiur. Very important. Everybody needs gratitude. Everybody needs recognition. There's nobody who can say of themselves that they don't need it because that's the way the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world. He created it in such a way that Tibiyochel, he needs it too. As if he needs it too. That's part of being godly, is to invest, to to radiate, to give, to find yourself in an environment which demands, and to find response in your giving, to find gratitude, to find an expression. And the Rebbeinu Shlom says to us, light the menorah. The Mishkan has just been built. What have I been doing for you all this time? Providing light, leading you through the desert, showing you the way. Light the menorah for me. Show me, not because I need the light. Just show me that you're alive. Show me that you've noticed what I've done for you and that it's important and that there's some kind of responsiveness. Because that's the relationship of king and queen. That's the relationship of husband and wife. That's the relationship of male and female, of essence and of content. Thank you.